Final hour of the Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd experiment for the week. Alfred and Bruff in the morning. The final hour of Alfred and Bruff is brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. And of course, the official automotive sponsor of Alfred and Bruff is the Dilawri Familia of Acura Dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. Jason Bruff back next week. He'll be with Jamie Dodd. Jamie is shaking in his boots at the idea of a week with Bruff.
That's right. I am. No yawning. No yawning allowed is what I understand.
No yawning is allowed.
I have to train myself out of that.
Let's bring on our next guest. It's the Moj, and Moj is presented by the West Coast Auto Group here on Sportsnet 650. What's happening, Moj? Any tips for working with Bruff here for my co-host today?
You know, Bruff is probably one of the most grumpiest individuals I've been around. I mean, Halford's fine. Like, you know, Mike's got a pretty positive attitude, but, you know, Bruff is like, you know, he's just grumpy all the time. I don't know why. I mean, but he is. So,
not mad, I'm disappointed.
If you're going to work with Bruff, it's kind of like just, okay, Mike, yeah. Okay, Mike. Okay, you're right, Mike. Okay, just keep him happy. Right?
All the advice I've gotten from the producers here who work with him every day is like, don't make eye contact. don't yawn in his field of vision. Like, okay.
And don't bring up any horse jokes because like, you get that horse face thing all the time, and he goes off the deep end on that as well.
He's the sad club commish. Okay, before we get in on the Lions, the Bombers lose their perfect record last night. They had the game-winning field goal available for them and missed it right at the end. Question though, like, why don't they just go for the rouge at that point? It's an easy win. Why go for the field goal? Am I missing something?
Well, hopefully, if you kick the field goal and kick it well, it probably is a rouge, right? But that was the problem. I mean, that was probably one of the worst field goal attempts I've ever seen in my life. It was horrible. I don't know what happened. I mean, when you see the replay, you see Leggio looking down at the holder, like, you know, what were you doing? But when you see the replay again, the hold seemed fine. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe you punt the ball through the end zone, but to me, I think the safer play is just the field goal and then get the rouge off the field goal. I mean, they're playing the percentages there, and obviously the percentages didn't work out.
Well, I mean, the Lions will take it because, you know, they've played fewer games than Winnipeg, but now Winnipeg has their first loss, so both teams sitting at one loss in the standings. Big matchup with Stampeders on the weekend. What are you looking for this matchup between BC and Calgary?
Well, first off, some breaking news, so to speak. The Lions are going to be without the services of running back James Butler, who's dealing with an ankle injury for the most part. He's also banged up with the rib. He's had this ankle injury for the last couple of weeks. So Bruce Anderson from North Dakota, the rookie, well, actually second-year players with Edmonton last year for three games. He'll get the start at running back. Also, Delvin Bro, their corner, is out with an illness. It's not COVID-related. It's just more of a flu bug. So he's been shut down for the week, and Ty Neil Cooper will draw in. So a couple of notes there. But when I look at this game, I think you got to go into Calgary and you got to play a clean game. You can't turn the ball over. You have to just go in there and, you know, play very good football, sound football. And that's winning the field position battle. It's winning the turnover battle. And I look at Calgary guys, and they're kind of like Winnipeg. They just, some of their wins haven't been dominant, and they've just kind of found a way to win. And I think they find that way to win because they're a veteran team. And, you know, we saw with Winnipeg earlier, I mean, I shouldn't say all their games, but when you look at Winnipeg this year, there are a lot of games that people said they should have lost that game, right? And they just kind of find a way to win. Last night, they didn't find a way to win. And I think Calgary's kind of in the same boat. I mean, anytime you have Bo Levi Mitchell stepping onto the field, I think you got a great chance of winning, even though he wasn't that good in the last game against Ottawa. I think he was like 13 of 27. And he's not the Bo Levi Mitchell that, you know, has won most outstanding player awards, but he's still a guy that can get it done. And again, as we mentioned, knows how to win.
So Nathan Rourke, I mean, should we just be buying all the stock? How for real is this kid?
Well, it seems every week, you know, I'm coming on and I'm talking to Mike or Jason or Bick or whoever, and we talk about Nathan Rourke, and yeah, he's the real deal. I mean, I told Mike and Jason that prior to the start of the season. The one thing that we saw with Nathan last year and even this year in training camp is his work ethic. I mean, everyone always thinks, like with the great athletes, that it's they've got this tremendous physical skill set, and that carries them to success. But, guys, you guys have interviewed enough players, and, you know, how many times you interview a player and you talk to him about the star player on the team, and you ask him what impresses him the most, and they talk about, you know, the guy's work ethic, right? Not only do you have that talent, but you got to combine it with an unbelievable work ethic, and that's what Nathan Rourke does. And as a result, he goes into games prepared. He's confident. He knows how to process, you know, what he sees when when he's going up against the defense. And the other thing, too, that I'll throw into the mix is the fact that with Nathan, he inspires his teammates. He's got a lot of respect from his teammates because of his work ethic and his preparation.
Maybe it's the work ethic. Maybe it's something else that he's done on the field. But what's impressed you the most about Nathan Rourke's performance? And as you said, Moj, you were calling him the real deal before the season. So, I mean, I guess the other thing is there anything he's done that's really surprised you to, you know, the extent of success he's had already in his career?
Bouncing back from adversity. He did it in Ottawa. He did it in Saskatchewan. In particular, the Ottawa game was 2-3 turnovers in that game. They were down, and they go on a run to win the football game. Same thing in Saskatchewan, what, 28 unanswered points, I believe. That's the thing that really impresses me. And, you know, my colleague Julio Caravetta has actually played the position in the CFL. Hell, they wouldn't even let me play quarterback when we went out to the park on Sundays. But, you know, Julio's played the position, and the one thing that Julio talks about, he goes, you go into a game, and if you throw a turnover or you fumble the ball, I mean, all of a sudden now it kind of gets to you, right? With Nathan, it doesn't. With Nathan, in fact, it probably gets him angry, and you know, he now takes it almost to another level. So the one thing about Nathan that's probably impressed me the most this year, fellas, is his ability to bounce back after making a mistake. There's no pouting. There's no, you know, the head goes down. The confidence kind of goes into the toilet. You know, he becomes a little gun shy. No, not this kid. I mean, he makes a mistake, he's right back at it.
The Moj joining us here on Halford and Bruff in the Morning, Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. You know, as good as Nathan Rourke has been, he gets a lot of help from the receiving group. You know, it looks like a match made in heaven between all involved. And the talent in the receiving core is really shining through. I mean, last week was incredible, the show that they put on against Edmonton.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk to the receivers, all these guys are ecstatic with the way Nathan is playing, clearly. But the other thing, too, is that there are quarterbacks that zero in on certain receivers, favorite receivers. Nathan doesn't do that. He will drop back, and he's going to process what the defense is giving him. And sometimes you'll see him go through his progression. First read's not there. Second read's not there. He goes to his third read. As a result, when you're a receiver and you hear, and I've talked to guys about this, whether it's Keon Hatch or even Dom Rhymes, and they all agree, is the fact that with Nathan at quarterback, on any single play, you can expect to get the football. It's not like if you are on the backside of the play that, you know, all right, it's going the other side, I'm just going to go through my motions here, so to speak. With Nathan, they believe that on every single play, they could get the football. So as a result, these guys are running crisp, effective routes 100% each and every play. And, you know, you look at the last game, I think there were 5 receivers with 5 or more catches, right? So with Nathan, all the receivers are always on point because they know they can get the football on any single play. And that's the really cool thing. I mean, you look at this offense, and there are games where they put up 30, 40 points, and you think, well, what did Lucky Whitehead do? You know, Lucky Whitehead might have had 5 catches for 60 yards, and the Dom Rhymes that goes off. Or, you know, there are other games where Lucky has a big game. But it's like they're almost taking turns in terms of who's had a big game. Keon Hatcher had a huge game in Ottawa, right? So it's something that's really cool about this offense. It's, you know, anybody can get the football.
How would you evaluate the offensive line's performance this year, Moj? Because I know, you know, over the last couple of seasons coming into this year, that was a bit of a work in progress. What have you seen from that unit?
Well, this is kind of interesting when you talk about the offense in general. You know, with the switch from Nathan to Michael, I think Jordan McSimmick, the offensive coordinator, has probably had more of a, I don't want to say impact on offense, but when Jordan calls the play now, he pretty much knows that Nathan is going to run the play. Whereas before with Michael Riley, I mean, and hey, Michael Riley's a Hall of Famer. He's a Grey Cup champion, and he's earned the right to go out there and perhaps change plays or do things differently. But I think with Michael, it was, you know, sometimes it's Mike's call, sometimes it was Jordan's call. So as a result this year, this is more of Jordan's offense, right? And as, you know, as an offensive coordinator, you want to put your players in a position to win. Hence, probably a lot faster developing plays, quicker plays. The other thing, too, with Nathan, he gets the ball out of his hands rather quickly, so that helps the offensive line. Nathan has more mobility than Michael Riley as well, so there are times where he does face pressure, and, you know, he can evade the pressure and still make a throw downfield. So the offensive line, I think, has been helped this year by the play calling and also by Nathan's mobility. So, yeah, I mean, the offensive line has played better. You look at the quarterback sacks allowed in the CFL, and I think the Lions are first in the league, and pardon me, in the least amount of sacks allowed on in terms of the offense. But to me, the big thing there is the play calling and the fact that you have a more mobile quarterback.
I heard your, at least our listeners, remember you are a big fan of Ask Us Anything Friday. Marcus and Gibson's.
No, it's not that. It's Would You Drather. Like, Would You Drather, to me, is probably the dumbest segment in all sports talk radio in North America. I tell Jason and Mike that all the time, but you know, Ask Us Anything Fridays. I mean, that's at least palatable.
Well, Marcus and Gibson's wants to know if this is the best receiving core the Lions have had since the G. Roy Simon era.
You know, that's a pretty good question, and I'd have to say yes. I just look at this group. I mean, think about the fact that they didn't have Brian Burnham for a month.
Yeah.
And they still put up monster numbers, right? I mean, Brian Burnham, oh, okay, you know what? Keon Hatcher steps up. Dominic Rhymes steps up. Lucky Whitehead has a big game. And here's the scary thing. I think Javon Katoy physically is probably one of the, you know, in terms of a physical skill set, it's amazing. I mean, here's a guy based on his measurables that, you know, went to NFL mini camps, right? So there's another guy that I think maybe in a certain offense on another team, maybe he gets profiled a lot more or featured a lot more. But, I mean, your fifth receiver could easily be a top three receiver on another offense. So, yeah, the depth they have in that receiving group, it's outstanding. And, like I said, I'd be hard-pressed to find a group of five receivers that are better than this group that they have right now. You probably would have to go back to the days of, you know, G. Roy Simon, Jason Claremont, Manny Arsenault in that group.
Moj, really appreciate the time this morning. Thanks.
Okay, fellas, have a great weekend.
Yeah, you as well. That's the Moj. He is on Sports at 650 and brought to you by the West Coast Auto Group. Great service, great selection, just over the bridge in Maple Ridge. The Moj bringing you a preview of the Lions and Calgary Stampeders tomorrow at 4 o'clock Pacific for the kickoff. Should be a good one. We'll see if Nathan Rourke can continue doing damage and continue on the train to the potential MOP award. Dan Riccio, Jamie Dodd, Ask Us Anything Friday is continuing here on the program. Snoop the Dog just couldn't wait to get more Miller talk in on a Friday morning. Would you retain 50% of Miller's cap to increase the return and increase the pool of teams that could fit Miller?
Absolutely. There's only 1 year left, yeah. Right? So, yeah. Now, I don't know
as
how much...
As long as the return is worth holding back that money.
I don't know how much it would actually juice the return because it is only 1 year, but yes, you do that without a second thought, I think.
I have a couple of thoughts on that. You know, the Canucks do want to open up most of the cap hit if they could, but realistically,
but
you're not going to be able to.
Well, and if you had done that at the draft, okay, then I understand the logic of we don't want to retain. If you're doing it now, well, you're probably not going to turn around and spend that money necessarily, right? Like, there's not a whole bounty of options for you to do that. So again, if it actually gets you a meaningfully better return, then I don't think you hesitate to do it.
Yeah. You could probably go through the theory of opening up the full cap hit makes sense because then maybe you're not spending into LTIR.
Sure, sure.
Right, and you can accumulate more cap space yep. that way through the course of the season. But, I mean, that would be mathematics that's well above my pay grade.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you can take on another team's bad salary if you have the whole $5.25 million. There are options. You're right.
And the return has to make it worth doing that for another squad. So what is that extra piece? Is it an extra second round pick? Is it something like that? I'm not entirely sure, but it would definitely have to be worth the squeeze. Ask us anything Friday. Keep it coming here on Halford and Bruff in the morning. Almost did it again.
I did see that we just put out the clip of you finding out why the Euro comes in all different shapes and sizes and feeling terrible about it.
Did we radio moment.
Oh, man. Great.
So now it's out there for everyone to see.
Now everybody, all of Twitter is going to know I'm a jerk.
At least you felt bad about it after.
Only a matter of time, Reach.
I will say I'm not alone in this thought, you know. Canadian money's got Braille. We're smart about it. Doesn't have to be different shapes and sizes. It's really clunky, you know, especially when you're traveling and you have a bunch of different types of bills.
Doubling down on it.
It's just not fun.
Okay? Keep digging that hole.
Just digging. Dig. This Ask Us Anything Friday. Assuming Green Lantern is the worst DC movie, what is the worst Marvel movie, and is it worse than Green Lantern?
I have not seen Green Lantern, so I can't answer that.
Is that the one with Ryan Reynolds?
Yes. I haven't seen it.
What's the one with Seth Rogen? Is there one with Seth Rogen?
Green Hornet.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I believe.
The Green Hornet.
I believe.
Because very different from the Green Lantern.
I think there's too many movies. I'm just putting it out there. I think there's too many.
I'm a fan of Marvel, and even I will say there is way too many Marvel movies right now and TV shows. Just complete oversaturation. It makes me go like, okay, just give us a year off, guys. Just take a year off. But of course they won't because it makes, you know, billions of dollars a year. Why would they?
Ant-Man? Like, I don't know. I haven't watched any of these.
I don't know. Paul Rudd's pretty charming in that role. I mean, it's not the most exciting Marvel movie, I would say, but Paul Rudd as the character is quite good, I would
say. I'll tell you my comic book knowledge. I didn't even know Ant-Man was a thing until the movie came out. So.
Well, I think a lot of people right there with
you. I mean, he's pretty... It's not like he's a famous... It's pretty obscure, I would say.
Okay.
I like Taika Waititi.
So it's like the Marvel equivalent of obscure sports quarterly.
Yeah. They're really... They're digging deep. They're going deep into the bench at this point.
Yeah, not a Marvel person at all, but the Taika Waititi Thor movies, I've actually watched the first one. I'm planning on watching the second one. I think he's doing a great job.
I've enjoyed them.
And I know nothing about Marvel movies, and I enjoyed it. So
I would say I'm probably somewhere in the middle of the spectrum between Reach and A-Dog, where it's like, I typically will see them and enjoy them, but I don't have passionate opinions about them. No, you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, whatever. That was fine, I guess.
You don't have a 12-page blog.
I enjoyed sitting in the theater and eating popcorn for a couple hours.
You're not picking out all the inconsistencies?
No.
Lore issues with the movie?
So earlier we were asked, Ask Us Anything Friday, if any 650 employee were to have a tweet similar to the one Antonio Brown sent out yesterday as his retirement tweet in the only way that Antonio Brown can actually have a retirement tweet, which was quite hilarious.
Truly bizarre.
My biggest regret in my career doesn't involve calling my GM a cracker or showing up to Raiders camp late in a hot air balloon with frozen feet or throwing rocks at that UPS driver. And it definitely doesn't involve taking my shirt off and doing a victory lap around the Jet Stadium mid-game while throwing up deuces. My biggest regret is that I'll never get to see me, Antonio Brown, play a game live. Sure, I can watch the game afterwards, but I can't imagine what that was like for you all to see something like that, like watching the Beatles or Jesus perform at Red Rocks. Antonio Brown on his biggest regret.
Classic. Who could forget Jesus's live set at Red Rocks? An all-time classic.
It did make me think of Talladega Nights. I picture my baby Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt, front row to Lynyrd Skynyrd concert. Just hammer drunk.
Oh, dear.
What, nobody remembers that scene?
I do.
So not to be self-serving or anything, but I didn't. Mike G, loyal listener to all programs here at Sportsnet 650, took it upon himself yesterday to answer this question, and of course he decided it would be me. And he even has the graphic up on Twitter. You know what? I'll retweet it right now.
Mike's a big Photoshop guy.
He is a big,
big Photoshop guy.
My biggest regret is I'll never get to see my calf muscles while walking. Sure, I can see them in a picture or video, but I can't imagine what it is like for all of you to see something like that. Riccio's biggest regret.
I would have gone with it, like doing it as you, that your biggest regret is that you never get to hear yourself from somebody else's perspective do the Italian accent. You never get to relive that experience.
Could also be true.
I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party.
I like to picture Jesus as a ninja fighting off evil samurai.
There you go, Rich. I got the scene.
The question, though, of which 650 employee could you see making a similar post? I don't think we have too many like runaway egomaniacs like AB, but the name that popped into my head was Dom Shermati. Not that it would be exactly like AB's, but just like to retire in in an odd way. That's the name that popped into my head.
So one of my favorite things about Dom, nephew Dom, I believe he's called on the show here.
Yeah.
He wears a sweater to work sometimes that just in big bold letters says work harder. As if he's trying to tell everyone that they're not working hard enough.
See, doesn't that seem like an AB thing? Like an Antonio Brown thing?
That's really weird because I always have to do that when Dom's here in studio. For some reason.
Maybe that he's just letting you know, hey everyone, I'm here. You're all going to have to work harder. Everyone needs to pick up the slack, okay?
Really hope he's listening right now.
I don't think so. It's funny, like, how many people from Vancouver travel to Budapest, and that two of those people work here? Me and Dom.
Yep.
It's amazing. All right.
Anyways.
Ask Us Anything Friday. We will take a few more questions before the show is out. Kira McCormack is next on Sportsnet 650. Final segment, Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd, Halford and Brough in the morning. We close out the week. Halford and Brough, the official automotive sponsor of Halford and Brough in the morning, is the Dilawri Familia of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. And hour three of the program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. It's Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. Yesterday, Major League Soccer released its investigation, released the results of its investigation into what happened with the Whitecaps with two separate coaches that in 2008, Bob Berarda and Hubert Busby Jr. in 2011. The results of the investigation said the Whitecaps acted appropriately in the moment and placed a lot of the blame on the investigator they hired at the time, and Chopra. In the last few years, this story broke out because of an ex-player on that team, Kira McCormack, who joins us now in studio. Thanks for this, Kira. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
We're doing well. It's been a few years. Back in 2019, I interviewed you with J.J. Adams on the now defunct show Fine Lines, but that was the first of this story coming out, and here we are 3 years later, and still, we have more of a resolution, but still being investigated, and I'm curious to hear how you feel about Major League Soccer's investigation.
I mean, I think at this point, I'd say we're sort of seasoned veterans, a little less naive to all of it. So, I mean, yeah, I wasn't surprised. To be honest, I was pretty grateful that the McLaren report came out last week because that essentially outlined exactly what happened. It outlined who at the White Caps were there and who were directly involved in the cover-up. So, like I said, as a seasoned veteran, we've sort of learned that these organizations are not going to find themselves liable of misconduct. So, I it kind of resembled almost like a grade 10 scribbling, a quick... didn't do their homework and just had to put something quick together. Especially comparing that with what was released by Canada Soccer last week.
Well, and as you allude to, there's so this one that was just released yesterday, 18 pages in total. The one that was done on behalf of Canada Soccer, 125 pages. So much, much more in-depth, much more detail. As you said, really listing out all of the various different things that happened. I mean... You kind of talked about it a little bit there, just the frustration of the difference there, but just what was your kind of initial reaction when you sat down and opened it up and saw, oh, okay, this is the kind of report it's going to be, only 18 pages?
I mean, I read it. I honestly couldn't believe how bad it was. Like, I could not believe an organization like Reuben Tomlinson would put their name on something like that. Like, yeah, I mean, and at this point, I think that's the beauty, I guess, in all of these sports abuse stories coming forward, is I think the public's a lot more savvy and they understand what's going on. And I think, and at this point, any organization that chooses to put out things like that, like, they're harming their brand, their reputation, their credibility, all those things. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't think it could be any worse than what the Sport Law Group did in 2019. And it was like Reuben Tomlinson went for like a new low.
In the report, they do mention that a lot of players were contacted but did not participate in the investigation. They say that they had hoped there would be more participation from players. What do you know about that? Why was there not more participation in that investigation?
Yeah, so, I mean, again, obviously I'm not speaking for all the players. There was a group of us that decided to get a lawyer, and they reached out to, PFA Can was also involved as well, in terms of representing a small group of the players. But, we had the lawyer reach out to the Reuben Tomlinson group and to find out if it was, in fact, an independent investigation like they were advertising to people. And obviously an independent investigation would mean that there's no loyalty either way. But when there's attorney-client privilege, then obviously they dictate the narrative, they dictate all of it. So basically the Reuben Tomlinson didn't answer the question. It was a very straightforward yes or no. And then there was an exchange back and forth with the lawyers. And then in the end, the ending quote from our lawyer was that it's absolutely vile to be presenting yourself to victims of abuse as independent when, since you can't answer a easy question, it's obviously you're acting in the interest of MLS. And so then that's why the majority of players, at least that I'm in contact with, decided not to participate.
Two of the findings that jump out from the recent report commissioned by MLS, one, that the Whitecaps' actions at the time, and I'm quoting here, indicate that they took the allegations seriously, and another one, that the review found no evidence of a cover-up. In particular, the finding that they took the allegations seriously, doesn't seem to jive with a lot of other things that we've heard. How would you react and respond to that finding from the report?
The McLaren report from last week, I highly recommend everybody read page 75 to 92 of it, and it basically outlines the whole situation. And I think anybody with parents with children, I think if a player is brave enough to come forward, a teenager at a residency camp with the national team, and shows a sexual text message, to people in positions of power in that organization, and the police isn't called immediately as the first step, I mean, that to me is a normal functioning member of society that cares about children. Like, that to me is what an appropriate response is, and that's not what happened. And again, if that's the standard that they hold themselves to, that not doing that's an appropriate, reaction, then I think that sort of is the crux of what the entire issue is.
It's, at the very least, speaking on opinion, Berardo was able to coach until 2019, until you spoke out in 2019. He's now pled guilty to sexual assault charges. The fact that this report comes out and completely, just says appropriate and they handled it seriously and puts the blame mostly on the investigator at the time, it kind of just it doesn't feel right considering he coached young women for so long here in this market, even after it happened. And the thing that the Canada soccer investigation focused on, at least I felt a lot in their findings, was that, you know, why wasn't anything said when the two parted ways? Why was it sold as a mutual parting of ways rather than giving the actual reasons as to why Bob Berarda was no longer allowed to coach the Whitecaps team and the U20 women's team? Like, why was that not a part of MLS's report? That to me was what struck me reading through that yesterday, and which really frustrated me while reading it yesterday. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I like, that's the thing that everybody has to remember. You know, I think our criminal justice system, it's very hard to get, you know, charges. It's very hard to get a conviction. So the fact that Berarda's pled guilty, I think, speaks volumes to the seriousness of all of it. And, you know, it, again, it speaks volumes to the fact that, you know, if we hadn't literally thrown ourselves off of like metaphorical balconies to like, you know, get somebody's attention that this was happening, he would still be on a field, you know. And that to me is just on like a purely human level. Like, I understand these organizations need to take care of themselves and all that type of thing. But on a purely human level, you know, like you said, it's not like he was in the backwaters of, you know, Alberta, you know, kind of sneaking on the field. I mean, his team won the under 17 national championships in 2018. Like, that is a front and center Canada soccer organized event. You know, the Whitecaps were highly involved with the BCPSL system, you know, and all those people knew and didn't do anything. And that to me is just, you know, and in the report, in the Canada soccer report, it talked about Bob Leonarduzzi and Victor Montagliani delivering, you know, the fake, you know, the mutual parting of ways. And there was a part of it that, again, I just, the level of egregiousness and, you know, just willful cover up, you know, a list of questions, what to ask, like how to answer, or potential questions from players, like, why didn't you guys do more in May? How can you let these things happen? You know, and that level of planning almost, and these players, and like how vulnerable you are as players in those situations, that to me is just the part, again, like I said, on a human level, so many parts of this just shock me.
I wanted to follow up on that. And because there was a May 2008 investigation, Berarda was allowed to continue to coach after that. There was a mandate for him to complete some training, some sensitivity training. In the Canada Soccer report, we find out that there's no actual evidence that any of that was completed. And then it continues through the summer, and there's another investigation that is happening in September of 2008. One of the things both reports kind of mentions is, you know, the Whitecaps acted appropriately, and they were very reliant on somebody that they thought to be an expert in Ann Chopra, the investigator that they hired. And there's a lack of funding on both sides. It's almost leaning on these organizations weren't equipped essentially to deal with this situation back in 2008. Being on those teams, like, how do you feel about, when you look back on it, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, for sure, like, but at the same time, like, Diane Voice, who was the manager, you know, she spoke up and was like, this isn't right. You know, at what point? You can have all the structures and all the policies and everything you want. And again, the Canada Soccer, you know, the Canada Soccer report said there was there was policies. Like, if the policies were actually followed, you know, again, there would have been a resolution in 2008. So again, if you can have all the policies in the world, if you don't have, you know, systems in place to hold people accountable to follow those policies, it doesn't matter if it's 2008 or 2022. Or whatever, like, you know, and then, yeah, of course, every organization can just hire some random Ann Chopra to do a fake investigation and have no notes or no paper trail and, you know, and do whatever they want in the situation. So I don't think, like I said, like, there's people there were adults in the situation like Diane Voice who did speak up, and it didn't matter. There were policies. All these things exist today. Like I said, unless something substantial changes in the system, I really implore every parent to, like, really monitor the environments that their kids are in. Because, yeah, it was an awful environment to be in back in the day. And the coaches had all the power. You know, Bob Berardo was an absolute gatekeeper. You know, Evan Pellerud, again, his conduct in the report wasn't very flattering where, the coach has been, you know, accused of sexual text messages, but the issue's dead, you know, like a week later, let's send him to the Olympics in the, you know, under 20 CONCACAF championships alone with the kids. Like, that makes sense. You know, again, like, yeah, it's honestly, it's just a level of shocking behavior. And it was an awful thing to go through as a player.
You've been kind of the face of this in a lot of ways, Kira, since the original blog post in 2019. And you've always been a really, really gracious with your time, certainly with us on the station. You've been a very kind of powerful advocate on this. But is there a sense of almost Groundhog Day setting in for you, right? Because, you know, every time there's a new development, we talk about it and we try to, but it doesn't seem like maybe the message is getting through in the same way. I don't know exactly how to phrase it. Is there a certain amount of exhaustion or you feel like we're just going through the motions here? Because we've been at this for a while and it seems like we're having a lot of the same conversations sometimes.
No, absolutely. And I was actually talking to one of the players about this. Like, we were joking that if people wanted to sort of understand the level of tenacity of our group, they would have just driven past a random field in Vancouver in 2005 and watched us just beating, you know, just the crap out of each other. And so I think it's a very tenacious group. And I think at this point, at least for me personally, like, I'm pivoting towards solutions, you know, like I think, again, we're having the same conversations, but I think, you know, sitting and talking to you in 2019, like, it's a very different public that's listening now. And I think there's been so much work done, not only by like our group and myself, but like lots of other athletes in gymnastics, you know, the Gymnastics Canada situation, Hockey Canada. There's so many, you know, bobsled and skeleton, like there's so many athletes that have come forward. And I think now the public is aware. And I think from that space is where you can start to talk about solutions, and it just can't be swept under the rug anymore. And I think, like, I know for me personally, like, I don't think I can walk away from this till I know that the kid's coming behind me, like, that it's a different situation. And so I think, like you said, it's about pivoting to solutions now because, yeah, I mean, again, it's like 3.5 years later and like the standard's even lower in terms of like what Ruben Thomason. So the change is not going to come from that side. It's not going to come from the NSOs. It's going to come from the athletes coming together. And I think that that's the direction that everybody's heading. And it makes me feel like there's purpose to like all the time and emotional energy that's been put into the topic.
Well, it has been a lot, and from this story alone, it's been a lot. You've become so passionate about safe sport, and you've been talking about the Hockey Canada situation, the other situations you've mentioned, and it's a real problem. You know, we saw the stories in the NWSL last year and the way coaches handled their business there. It's a real issue for young athletes to be put into safe environments. And ultimately, like, we're not trying to tear any sport down. You know, we love soccer. Yeah. This is the thing. Like, we want it to just be a safer and better place for everybody involved. And it's clear that that hasn't really been the case through history, not just through soccer, but through a lot of these sports organizations. And that's ultimately where the goal is and where we want to get to, right?
For sure. And I mean, I think, again, witnessing the Hockey Canada situation, you know, like with their CEO, Scott Smith, I think is his name, and you have MPs, you have Sheldon Kennedy, you have all these people calling for his resignation, and he's like, nah, I'm good, you know? And and that's, again, I think, again, very illustrative of the issues we're facing, that there is, it is literally like dealing with absolute power. And I think, again, what you're seeing, until we change those structures, you know, again, we love, like, sports an amazing thing, and you just want it to be the ultimate of what it can be. And unfortunately, you know, it's going to continue unless there's some kind of structural change. And like I said, like, I'm uplifted in the sense that talking to other athletes in other sports, we're all on the same page with this, that it's not going to come. The organizations, again, in this situation, have had 3.5 years to make the situation right, and they've lowered the bar. So, I mean, I think it's just on us as athletes and as the general public with their children in sport to take the issue into our own hands and to be a part of changing it.
One final thing is before we wrap this up, you know, we've seen this recent report from Ruben Thomason, but the bigger report from McLaren Sports Group, we learned so much more in that. What do you hope some of those findings lead to now that we're here?
I mean, I think at the end of the day, when you're in these situations, I mean, I'm just so grateful, like, and I'm so proud of our, like, overall, you know, the group of, you know, players behind the scenes that have been working on it and people that have been supporting us. Yeah, I mean, I think that it's just, again, about sort of like focusing forward and you know, just, again, being a part of changing things for the better, because, yeah, I mean, otherwise it will continue to happen. And
yeah, we really appreciate your time this morning, Kiara. Thank you for coming in studio, and thank you for all you've done on this for the last 3 years. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks for having me in.
That is Kiara McCormack. You can follow her on Twitter by her name. It's Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. We close out Halford and Brough in the morning next on Sportsnet 650. All right, final 7 minutes here on Halford and Brough in the morning. Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. I want to thank Kiara again for coming into the studio and sharing that story, sharing her thoughts and opinions. I mean, look. The investigation thing, it's that investigation was commissioned in November of last year. It took them 9 months to give us 18 pages? Really?
2 pages a month. Solid output.
And most of those pages was just like, here's the situation and what we did, and like the actual findings are like, wow, okay. Very frustrating. Thank you again to Kiara for her work in this space. And it's obviously a major conversation that's going on coast to coast in this country because of everything that's happened with Hockey Canada in recent days and weeks as well. All right, so final few minutes here on Ask Us Anything. And if you have a What We Learned, we can get some What We Learned.
I do have a What We Learned.
All right.
So I wanted to get this in. I wanted to make sure we got this in. What We Learned, Little Mountain Baseball, one win away from the Little League World Series. I got to give a shout out to Little Mountain Baseball just up the road for me on Main Street, right by Hillcrest, right by Nat Bailey is where they play. And they are playing in the final of the Canadian Little League Championship today.
Oh, wow.
I believe at 10 a.m. You can watch it on CBC online.
So this books them a spot.
And if they win, they are through to the Little League World Series.
Okay.
And I was checking out, because I saw they tweeted about the result yesterday. They beat in the semifinal, they won a nail biter, 3-2 over the host team in Calgary. But I was looking back through their other results. They have been barnstorming through this tournament. Some of their other results, 13-0 against Ontario, 21-3 against Quebec, 14-1 against Alberta.
Yep.
And then the team they're playing in the final, which is Manitoba, they beat 15-5. So look, that doesn't always mean they're going to get a similar result in the final here, but they've been kicking butt and taking names at the tournament. So shout out to Little Mountain Baseball. I hope they get the job done today.
That's a lot of runs.
They're scoring a lot of, and especially because I believe in Little League, there's a mercy rule.
Yeah.
So to get to like 20 runs, you got to do it quick because the game's going to end once you're up 10.
It's always a team from BC coming out of Canada too. Always a team from
the baseball hotbed.
Yeah. There's an appetite for
it. Anyways, I wanted to make sure I got that plug in for the kids from Little Mountain.
I know I had some What We Learns come in earlier on the show.
Got a moo cow. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah. Forgot about the moo cow.
We can go back to Ask Us Anything. I don't know.
There is one thing I did want to get in. It's a little bit of a stretch because I'm not much of a politics guy. But like,
this is exciting.
Great way to start this, hey?
Let's go out with a bang here. Final few minutes of the show.
We're talking
politics, baby.
What We Learned. So LIV Golf is just an elaborate scheme to get nuclear intelligence from Donald Trump.
That does seem to be on the table. That does seem to be on the table.
I mean, there's a non-zero chance.
There's definitely like some dots you can connect that would make it make sense. That's all we're going to say.
Yeah, Jared Kushner took $2 billion from the Saudis.
Yep,
and
they're holding the golf tournament at his place, and I don't know.
Now there's nuclear codes at Mar-a-Lago, like, or Nuclear documents, I should say.
Yes.
Anyways, LIV Golf. I mean, the story of LIV Golf just keeps
getting wilder.
If you're Cameron Smith, you're like, did I sign that contract already?
Is it too late to back out? Maybe I'll just stick on the PGA, the good old PGA.
Feels like, whatever, you know. Mickelson's like,
man. Oh, man.
It's all good.
Phil is like, listen, I got gambling debts. I need the money.
I'm pot committed, guys. I'm good.
I'm all in on this.
Waiting for the text line to blow up.
What we learned, Canadian Rowan Wick closed the Field of Dreams game. Oh,
shout
we didn't
out to Rowan Wick.
That. Sorry.
I forgot that was your what we learned.
Yeah. surprising, I know.
Maury the Mill Guy, ask us anything. Have any of you guys ever been dollywalled and read a prank name on air?
Oh.
People thought they got me once. But I actually was completely aware of what, and I purposely left a long like pause in the middle of the name. I don't want to say it again because people will, like, jump on me again. I left a long pause in the middle of the name and enunciated very, very clearly to make sure everyone would understand what I was saying. But no, I've never gotten got, at least not yet. There's always time.
Yeah. I have gotten got once on 650.
Explain.
I can't say the name, so it's hard to explain. Without there being a bit of a punchline.
Was it Buster OnlyFans?
It was not Buster OnlyFans. That happened to Jeff Blair. Good friend of mine. It was a listener that goes by, or a texter that goes by the first name Master.
Yeah. Okay, but... And then it's Vader at the end, right? Yes. But you just... So that's the same one from me. But I say Master, pause... Vader.
Yes. Okay.
As in Darth Vader.
Yes. So it's not as bad.
No. What I'm saying is, like, I saw it in the inbox. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a challenge I'll take on, and I'll make it exceptionally clear what I'm saying.
Yep.
You didn't get me.
Yep.
I navigated my way through it.
So,
are you ungettable?
Funny story for my 590 days. One of our producers. His name in the producer screen, which is a screen that you can share with producers and hosts so that you can type notes to each other or see which caller is on the line and next up sort of thing. So his login name to the program was... I can't even say it.
Oh, boy. You know, you can't leave us hanging.
His login name was Tyler Balsick. And... The host totally read it on air. It was like, we would write traffic at 57 or whatever,
yep.
And he would be like, all right, time for traffic now with Tyler Balsick. It was great. But he didn't say it as generously as I said.
No. Good way to end the show.
Yep. It's been a pleasure here on Halford and Bruff in the Morning. Thank you to you, the listener, and all your texts throughout the course of the week. I'm off for a few. We'll talk to you in September. Jamie is here with Jason Bruff next week on the show. For producer A-Dog and Laddie, my co-host Jamie Dodd, I'm Dan Riccio. You've been listening to Halford and Bruff in the Morning on Sportsnet 650.